Pinda's ability, and wears a sunflower in airports when traveling. She says it leads to extra support when getting around, such as assistance in security, and more time and understanding from airline staff. She describes a hidden disability.
Yeah, a hidden disability can be any number of things. It can be a neurological or developmental disability, intellectual disabilities, also traumatic brain injuries, and things like dyslexia, other types of cognitive disabilities. Anything that isn't necessarily apparent when you look at a person, but still requires support. Can still benefit from supports of different types.
Knowing how it could benefit people throughout Nanaimo, Clay Tree Society teamed up with the Nanaimo Association for Community Living to write a letter to the city's Advisory Committee on Accessibility and Inclusion earlier this month. The letter encouraged the city of Nanaimo to consider joining the Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Network and adopting the sunflower symbol at city-owned facilities.
I wrote a letter to the city of Nanaimo to see if they would consider adopting the symbol in city-owned facilities, including tourism. And that would signal to people that Nanaimo is a city where it is safe and safe to come to, welcoming for people with invisible disabilities. And really, it's about increasing accessibility across the board.
She says she would like to see the program adopted in facilities like the Nanaimo Aquatic Center, Bevan Park, and Oliver Woods Community Center, where staff would be trained to recognize that anyone wearing a lanyard may need extra support or time. Stewart says if the city starts to incorporate the sunflower symbol at its own facilities, it may encourage other local businesses or organizations to join in as well.
It's like a ripple in the pond. So right now we're seeing the lanyard adopted mostly in transportation, such as airports, but extending that into city facilities and possibly extending that into different retail facilities. And ultimately, it could become a very widely recognized symbol that would just improve accessibility and inclusiveness for everyone across the town.
From being with her son, Stewart says she knows what it could be like for someone with a hidden disability to enter into stores.
When I'm in community with an individual who has different types of support needs and their disability isn't necessarily visible, when you, for instance, go into a store, and if you're with a person who maybe wears a ball cap and sunglasses inside because they have a sensory sensitivity, sometimes the way that people present outwardly would cause suspicion, especially in a town that's grappling with social disorder the way that Nanaimo is at times. So unfortunately, you do get suspicion sometimes going into businesses and retail shops.
She says something like the sunflower symbol could help shopkeepers, retail clerks, and security to recognize that someone has a hidden disability. Sean Enns is the Integrated Services Manager for Nanaimo Association for Community Living. He is very supportive of the sunflower lanyards and understands how they can be beneficial for many people in Nanaimo.
So rather than wearing a label that says I'm a person with a disability, which, you know, comes with its own stigma because we do still stigmatize disability in a lot of ways. And treat people differently, the sunflower just sort of identifies that you are a person who may need support from time to time.
And says adopting this program throughout Nanaimo would encourage people to take some accountability in making sure everyone feels supported.
You know, whether you're a business or a recreation facility or a city-owned space, whatever you are, we are all part of a community. We all live here together. I think within our neighborhoods, you know, we all want to be of support, not just to our families, but to the people around us, to our friends, our neighbors. And this is a system that sort of lends itself well to that.
He says if different organizations or businesses were to adopt the Sunflower Program, the Hidden Disability Sunflower Network offers online training so staff are knowledgeable and comfortable helping someone who may need extra support.
And so what I would love ultimately, I mean, I guess from a scenario, is that if someone whom we support is, you know, out in the world and maybe on their own and feeling distressed, if they've got this sunflower, that they're not alone, that someone will see it, someone will know what to do and step in and help them.
And says if the city and other businesses were to join the network and display support of the Sunflower Lanyard, it would start conversations around how not all disabilities look the same and how to be supportive of everyone in their community.
It's 1 in 4 people experience disability on some level. Many of those are hidden or seem invisible. It doesn't mean people don't have challenges and barriers that they need support with from time to time. Certainly not everyone does, but I think just raising awareness, you know, I believe this will go a long way.
In an email to CHOI, the city of Nanaimo says the letter from Clay Tree Society and NALC has been received by Nanaimo City Council. And quote, it will be up to council to decide next steps once the report is prepared and brought forward to them after research is done and more answers are provided. End quote. Those seeking more information about the Sunflower program can find it at hdsunflower.com. For CHY News in Nanaimo, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you again to CHOI and Lauren McKenzie for that news piece. We're going to be taking another music break for the hour. This one is coming from the Golden Age of Wrestling with Map to the Stars. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Map to the Stars by the Golden Age of Wrestling, aka Devours, a local artist and someone who was recently interviewed here at CJSF. The interview aired last Friday, and it was conducted by one of our summer employees, Hallelujah Hailu, and her and Stella have just been producing so many amazing, awesome interviews, and you can hear them all 10 a.m. on Fridays here at CJSF. So make sure you tune in for 10 a.m. Friday, every Friday for the summer, as well as just every 10 a.m. here at the station, because we have Speak Up, we have Intravenous on Wednesdays, and we have another amazing show now, 10 a.m. on Friday. So make sure you tune in for that. We're going to be moving on to another news piece that I produced last week, speaking with a social planner with the City of New Westminster on their summer spice drive. Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The City of New Westminster is currently hosting a summer spice drive until August 28th. According to city staff, the New Westminster Summer Spice Drive is a cooking spice collection event taking place throughout the summer season for local food providers and food banks in New Westminster. The idea for this came from the city's Food Security and Systems Plan Working Group, which had been receiving feedback on the need for more culturally preferred foods for residents of New Westminster. To learn more about the Spice Drive, the reception it's received so far, and where people can donate, we reached out to New Westminster social planner Christina Rucci. From speaking with her, it became clear that one of the goals of this spice drive is to diversify the output of New Westminster's food banks in a way that reflects the diverse population of the city itself.
Last year, in December 2025, our council endorsed our food security and systems plan. So this plan really looks at where the gaps are in our food system, how we can fill them. It is a lot around kind of the downstream, like how can we feed people right now? But, you know, we have some upstream measures as well, which kind of lead to more sustainability of our food system. So as we were doing the engagement for this plan, we talked to a lot of folks who use our local food banks. And one of the things that came up more than anything else, I would say, is the lack of culturally preferred foods at food banks. And so many of our food, like our food providers across New West, are actually agency partners of the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. And so they get a lot of their supplies from the food bank, and spices and culturally preferred foods are missing. So we kind of thought, like, an easy, kind of fun way to help people, help their meals and make them more flavorful, is that we would remind them home a little bit, is to do a spice drive. And so that was kind of the idea behind it. And so that's what we did.
We also then talked about what sort of spices are being asked for in particular.
It was kind of hard to figure out which spices would be the most preferred by people. So I just kind of, you know, I did a quick kind of survey and Google search of what the most popular spices are for people from, you know, Eritrea or the bigger kind of populations in New West that might be using food banks and food services. So, you know, we kind of came up with kind of a pretty broad list: cumin, paprika, garlic powder, curries.
Lastly, Christina Rucci spoke on the specific areas that people in New Westminster are able to donate their spices throughout the summer.
So we have City Hall at 511 Royal Avenue, Queensborough Community Center, Tamasat Aquatic and Community Center, the Anvil Center, and Fraser Health Public Health Unit, which is on at 610 6th Street. It's kind of upstairs, and so they actually have great hours as well. They're open till 7:30 at night, so a little bit later. The New West Farmers Market will also be collecting them on Thursdays, so they have a bin there as well for people to drop off their spices.
That was Christina Rucci, a social planner for the City of New Westminster, speaking on the Summer Spice Drive, which aims to provide spices to local food banks and food providers for the City of New Westminster. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. We are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much to Christina Rucci for that interview. And we're going to be going on to another piece that I produced last week on Burnaby becoming part of a growing list of municipalities that are advocating for a low-income transit pass. Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 14th, Burnaby City Councillor Maita Santiago put forward a motion advocating for a low-income transit pass. The motion called on Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley to write a letter to the BC provincial government advocating for this change. The motion passed unanimously. And afterwards, CJSF reached out to City Councilor Santiago to learn more about what low-income transit accommodations in Burnaby would look like and what the personal importance of this motion was for her.
Yeah, so this this was actually first brought to our attention by Movement. So they wrote to us, you know, to let us know that this is something that they're advocating for. And then recently they also held a rally at the Metrotown SkyTrain station that I was able to attend. And when they raised this issue, it brought back to me my experience when I returned to Burnaby, to Canada, after many years overseas. And I remembered how, well, first of all, how hard it was to find a job after being away for so long. And when I finally had one, I remember going to the SkyTrain station, putting in my debit card, and then not having enough funds to cover like the two-zone fare to get to my new job. Luckily, I was able to, you know, walk a couple of blocks back home, find some, you know, some loose change and pockets and bags and what have you, get to my job. But so that really, brought it home for me about how important something like this is. For people really just trying to get to work for the most part and really having not much else, I think it can make a really big difference.
During our conversation, we also learned that the motion and subsequent letter from Mayor Hurley calls on the province to expand the already existing BC Bus program, which is currently only available for low-income seniors and people receiving disability assistance from BC.
Yeah, so what we called for in our motion is for the province of BC to expand eligibility for its BC Bus Pass program to include low-income households across Metro Vancouver, so including Burnaby. So I think the bus pass, these subsidized bus passes now are about $45. So that's something that we would like to see for people in Burnaby as well as for people across Metro Vancouver.
This is not the first motion of its kind to pass throughout Metro Vancouver. A few weeks prior, Vancouver City Councillor Sean Orr passed a similar motion, and since our interview with Councillor Santiago, City Councillor Lubick of Port Moody has passed an identical motion as well, advocating for a low-income transit pass.
I think a number of other, you know, cities have already passed similar ones, along with Vancouver and Burnaby. I think City of Langley has, and I think the City of Port Moody, through Councillor Amy Lubick, is also looking to do something similar. And as well, we know that other major cities or major areas, regions across Canada have, low-income bus passes for residents. So, Yeah, is it possible? Yeah, I think absolutely.
The advocacy for a low-income transit pass has also been driven by Movement YVR, a Metro Vancouver transit advocacy group that held a rally on July 1st in support of the policy. Councillor Santiago had referenced this as a motivation for her motion, and it looks like other municipalities are beginning to follow suit. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. If you've already done things around the home with birds in mind, like hanging up bird feeders or nest boxes, turning off the lights at night during migration, keeping cats indoors, consider one more action that might be less obvious. Turning the thermostat down a degree or two in the colder months and up a degree in the warmer months might seem more about personal preference or energy bills than birds. But climate change is a grave threat to birds, putting two-thirds of North American bird species at risk of extinction. So anything that decreases carbon emissions is a step towards a better future for birds, not to mention people. Of course, not everyone can change their thermostat settings, depending on building policies and health concerns. But if you are able to, turning thermostats down in winter and up in summer, and using alternative ways to stay comfortable, can save up to 10% on a home's yearly energy costs. And programmable thermostats can help keep your heating and cooling efficient without much input from you. BirdNote has inspired millions of people to take action for birds. Learn more and join us at birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Hundreds of feet deep in the ocean, light fades to black, and a vibrant ecosystem comes to life. This is the ocean's twilight zone, a cold, dark place that's home to strange jellyfish and glowing squids, as well as plankton and countless fish.
It's really an amazing assemblage of animals that have adapted to these low light and cold conditions.
Chris Dorsett of the nonprofit Ocean Conservancy says these animals help regulate the Earth's climate by transporting planet-warming carbon deep underwater. The ocean absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Then tiny phytoplankton near the ocean's surface take up carbon as they photosynthesize and grow. Every night, creatures from the twilight zone swim to the surface to eat these phytoplankton and other creatures. Then they take that carbon back down to the deep, where much of it will remain. But Dorsett says the Twilight Zone is in trouble as companies grow more interested in deep-sea fishing and mining. So he says it's vital that countries enact policies to protect it.
This area very much needs to be protected before activities begin that could really impact it and impact those values for society.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
We've reached the end of this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF, but make sure you tune in tomorrow for Intravenous as well. We're going to play one last track for all of you. This one is from a band that recently was a part of our Studio 6 series, Studio 6 being the sort of live Tiny Desk-esque series that we do here at the station where we bring a band in. And they perform. Not only do we air it live on air, but then we also put it up on our YouTube channel. Strawberry Punch was one of those bands that we put live on air very recently, and this is their track, Lavender and Maple.
I'm always looking for her. Every face.
You're tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. In just about a minute, we have Democracy Now!, but make sure you tune in for the rest of the amazing programming we have for the day. Shows such as Raccoon City, typically Tuesdays, Free City Radio, Harbinger Showcase later in the afternoon, as well as tonight with Slumber Party and Bitcoover. Thank you all so much for tuning in this hour. It's been a pleasure, as always. And, of course, make sure you tune in to Intravenous tomorrow with our public affairs and talk coordinator, Nicole Hines, right at 10 a.m. All right. It's been a time, but tune in for Democracy Now!